America.
Due to the global outbreak of the coronavirus, the Voice of America is taking every necessary precaution to safeguard its employees, so our broadcast will look a little different today and in the near future as we reduce our staffing at VOA headquarters here in Washington. We appreciate your staying with us on Straight Talk Africa. Joining us today to talk about the upcoming elections in Malawi is Janet Zenat Karim, a former diplomat with the permanent mission of the Republic of Malawi in New York, and reporter Edson Chagala, who is based in Blantyre, the Malawian commercial capital. I have to say that Janet and Edson, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. It's been an honor as well. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka. It's great to be here with you, and thank you for having us here.
You're most welcome, and I have to assure you that the feeling is mutual. Now, Edson, let's come to you since you have the vantage point of being on the ground. Walk us through the developments on the ground, especially in view of the fact that the chairperson of the Malawian Electoral Commission, Dr. Jane Ansah, is history. She tendered her resignation. Has it been accepted?
Thank you very much, Shaka, for having me on the show. Yes, indeed. It's now history that we have Jane Ansah resigned as the chairperson for the Malawi Electoral Commission. It came to many as a shock, considering that the number of demonstrations that were organized, for example, last year, asking for her to go, could not yield anything. But now with the Supreme Court of Appeal agreeing with the lower court, the High Court, annulling the last year's presidential elections, she just had to say goodbye. What happened is that she just had to accept and seriously take leave of her office. In the meantime, what we are experiencing is now that gap, that vacuum that has been created, because in under 20 plus days, we are supposed to go to the polls. As such, her leaving was expected by many. However, it came as a shock because she left quite late rather than leaving earlier than was expected. So yes, Jane Ansah is now history. We are expecting to have another chairperson for the Malawi Electoral Commission.
What about some sources which are saying that you are probably experiencing a sort of constitutional crisis?
So it is a situation we are saying it's a constitutional crisis, because nobody knows which direction we are taking now. Why? We don't know until today when exactly Malawi is going to the polls, which is the date that Malawi is going to the polls. At the same time, it's now like there's power, you know, power hungry from either of the constitutional bodies. The parliament says, no, we still have a say. The courts have said you have to go to the polls. And then you find that the Attorney General comes in and says, no, there's nobody who can set a date save for the Malawi National Assembly. So it's that crisis which needs just to be handled with care.
So let me ask you this question again. So what is the mood like on the ground?
Malawians are very enthusiastic and very optimistic to go to the polls and cast their vote, choosing their president of their choice. Now that we don't have a president, until we have a new one. So on the ground, a lot of things are happening. Politicians are going out full throttle campaigning, and people are thronging their rallies, trying to hear the issues and promises that may help them choose the right president. At the same time, there is the COVID, which is also a scare to many, but many people are paying a blind eye to the COVID-19, and they are thronging these rallies, regardless of the threats that it comes with.
Wait a minute, Edison. How can you possibly say that you do not have a president until you get a new one? You obviously have an incumbent president until another one or until some other president is elected, isn't it?
The Supreme Court, if we were to go into the ruling of the Supreme Court, the president we have now is the caretaker president because there were no elections after the five-year mandate of the president that was voted into power. So for now, we have a president who is taking care of the situation until we have the new president who will be sworn in, whether it's him or somebody else.
I see. Janet, what is your immediate reaction to the resignation of who I figure, or rather who I understand, in fact, at one time happened to be your classmate at college, that you actually used to breathe the same air, Dr. Jane Ansah?
Well, I would like to commend my friend Jane Ansah for the decision that she has taken. The writing has been on the wall for a very long time, and she, as a very learned person, a doctor, she's the first doctorate of law in our country. So she has studied the law.
Now, wait a minute. Did she in fact become the first doctor of laws before the incumbent president, Professor Mutarika, who actually earned the equivalent of a PhD in law at Yale back in 1964?
I'm talking about the locally trained Malawian lawyers.
I see.
Right?
I see.
Those that have been in the country because, you know, let's face it, Professor Mutarika came into the country in the, I think in the, I don't know when, the 1990s. 1995 was when we first saw him. He was the chairperson of the constitutional conference that we had in Malawi. That's the irony of it all, that we're having all these constitutional problems under a president, under the leadership of a person that was the chairperson of the very brilliant constitution that we have. But to answer your question, Dr. Ansah should have resigned long ago, but she was saying she did not. She said that she did not want to resign as a result of the demonstrations. But the demonstrations were backed by the constitution, of which she and I were delegates at that constitutional conference. We were there, and we ensured that the elements of the constitution that have gone and that are actually being used now against this president and against Dr. Ansah, we were all delegates at that constitutional conference. And those elements are there, and the judiciary is acting on the elements that we put in, we Malawians, put into our constitution.
Now, Edison, given that Dr. Ansah has stepped down, perhaps due to some of the demonstrations organized by the opposition, talk to me about who actually, in your view, you think has the momentum. Who has the momentum? Is it the opposition or is it the incumbent president, Professor Mutarika?
A big question, a very difficult question. However, I would say that Malawi needs to move forward. Whoever is planning to become the president of the republic surely must also look at how our constitution should be modeled. It's a situation where the opposition and the ruling parties are all like Mouth Agape and Hands Akimbo saying, where are we going next? Everybody is like shocked as to how events are happening in Malawi. We still don't have a date today. We thought June 23 is going to be a day when we went to the polls, but alas, here we come again. Somebody just says, no, it's going to be Parliament sitting and deciding on the day. So the going out of Jane Ansah is another gap that has to be cleared. At the same time, we still need to know a day and date when we're going to go for the votes. Because the more we wait, the more anger people have. Because do not necessarily understand what is happening. Because what we all know now is we're supposed to go to the polls and vote. And if the dates keep changing, people think that somebody is trying to play games. So Jane Ansah is gone. The new chairperson is supposed to come in. However, they're going to select him or appoint him. But time is of essence. Malawians want just to go and vote and have a president.
What do you think is the driver behind these elections? Is this election driven by the issues, or is it driven by personalities, as some have suggested?
There have been promises, and people would like to see those promises fulfilled. 1 year has passed, nothing really to show. So Malawians are desperate. We are poor, a poor nation, and nobody wants to be called poor. And with the promises that come with politicians, Malawians now, they are looking at the long-term problem that politics has brought, and politics itself is supposed to change. So what is at stake now is we want that which was promised to us, whether by the opposition or the ruling party, but time is running out. So Malawians now, knowing that last year's elections were now they just want to say, when are we having our next president? And they are actually eager to go and cast their vote, to find the president who will give them what they desire.
Janet, what about you? Are these elections about the issues, or are they about personalities?
They're about issues. Let me just point one thing, I want to point about two things. First of all, while the campaign is going on, the Tonse Alliance, which is made up of 9 opposition parties, the chief amongst them being the UTM and the Malawi Congress Party. They're going out, all the leaders are going out, including Dr. Chakwera, Dr. Chilima, they're going out, Dr. Joyce Banda, they're going out and campaigning. On the, the current government side, with Professor Mutarika, while his leaders, other people in the party, are going out on the campaign trail, Professor Mutarika himself has not come out to do any campaigning. So that's one problem that is going to be there for the DPP UDF political side. Okay, their leader is not there. Only the vice presidential nominee is there. President Mutarika has not been coming out to do any campaign. As far as the issues are concerned, let me point out to you, Shaka, that we had the 9th pastoral letter that was issued by the Catholic Church, and it had a 7-point issue agenda that they spoke to: poverty, health, education, the environment, COVID-19. They address these issues, corruption in high places, and the vacuum, leadership vacuum being there. They address these issues. And if the leaders that are campaigning, for to be our next president, they will take these issues. And I must say, so far, even the Tonse Alliance, they have been talking about the issues. One of the things that has been brought up again and again is the cost of fertilizer. Why is that an important issue? That is an important issue because Malawi does not have gold mines. Malawi does not have diamonds. We had some uraniums. I don't know what happened to it, but we don't have the uraniums anymore. But Malawi is predominantly an agricultural country. And if you put a bag of fertilizer at $25,000, when someone earns $15 a month, that's really, cutting people in the feet, and they cannot do that. And that's why we have so many petty traders or people from the rural areas rushing to the cities, because they need to find a livelihood. They need to make money in order to survive, for their families to survive. So by reducing the cost of a bag of fertilizer to $4,000, that puts it in reach of, the Malawians, the majority of Malawians, who are peasant farmers.
I see. Erickson, when you talk about the incumbent president, Professor Mutharika, you're talking about a man who obviously has already gone through his first term. What would you say has been his single most important decision for Malawi? And what about the single most regrettable decision that he has made during that period?
Shaka Sali, I will tell you that President Peter Mutharika is viewed as the professor of law. At the same time, as the leader of Malawi, what I can see is that he, to an extent, tried to fulfill what was started by his brother, Bingwa Mutharika. But one thing that I would single out is the introduction of technical colleges across Malawi in almost all 193 constituencies, where he is trying to build and put up structure for technical colleges. Technical colleges to enable those young Malawians in the rural setting to access technical skills. That is one. However, while on the same, I would love to see that functioning, because structures are one, but to manage them and having everything in order is another. The second thing is, if Mutharika was to revive Malawi, for example, because what I'll tell you now is, like, the Malawi government is dependent on taxes. And a country that is relying on taxes alone, I don't think will achieve most of what development means. For me, like the Kamuzu, in the Kamuzu era, where we had government having some private properties, like the sugar company, the leather company, cloth making companies, those companies were making money. The profits were taken back into the government coffers, in account number one, and it was taken back to the society where you have drugs in the hospitals, maybe schools were built and other things. But now, relying on taxes alone, as I see even the other coming governments, if they are going to remain the same, I think the poverty will be our best friend, who is also the biggest beast that will kill us all. So I'm looking at a situation where if only these were revamped, I think Malawi would be talking of a different story. But if the same is going to remain the same, even if we have an angel coming from heaven, Malawi will still remain a poor country. Why? There are so many things that are supposed to be done. For example, the road infrastructure. Yes, Peter Mutharika is trying to bring them back, but these are the roads that were built then. The kind of people that are being brought to do the same are now the ones that are being called corrupt people. So you'd see that situations have been positive and at times negative. He's a president who, for me, as a journalist, would say, thank you, Mr. President. At least not us as journalists have been imprisoned. Okay? We've been given the freedom to publish everything we want, provided we have the evidence, and nobody has been arrested. But talking of governance, issues of corruption, tribalism, and others, it's what people have been saying. Why can't this be looked at and stopped as soon as it can? So we have a president here who, if given another mandate, must look at all these things. But if not, then I think the coming president should seriously look at these issues. If Malawi is to be called the home heart, not just the home heart for people who come to Malawi and we smile at them and show our happiness in our rags, but the home heart in all spheres of life.
What about you, Janet? How would you respond to the same question that I posed to Erickson? And I'm talking about what would you say, in your view, that is the single most important decision that Professor Peter Mutharika has made during his presidency? And what about the single most regrettable decision during the same period?
Well, I'd like to concur with Edison on what Edison had said, so I'm really not bringing anything new to the conversation. However, I would just like to add that in what Edison was talking about, that before, when we had Dr. Banda ruling the country, government owned a lot of companies, and when we say they owned it, they had shares in a lot of companies. We take, for example, the cloth making industry. You started from the seed that is cotton growers. You give seed to the cotton growers and they grow the cotton. Then the government goes and, you know, the company goes and gets it and then changes it into cotton and then makes a cloth out of it. The tailors come and buy it and, you know, sew the beautiful shirt that you're wearing, Shaka, with cloth made in Malawi. That was wonderful. Yeah. But now come in the government of Dr. Mlungsi in democratic Malawi, and we had what we call the privatization commission and privatization program. This is the beast that has killed Malawi and rendered Malawi into spiral into further poverty, because with the closing of the industries, it meant people did not have a livelihood. The cotton industry, you kill the cotton industry, you're killing it from the farmer. So the farmer, the cotton, the cotton fields are no longer there, because even if they grow the cottons, who's going to buy it? Because the David Whitehead and Sons, the government owned shares in, was sold to somebody, and that somebody saw that he was making more money if he brought in secondhand clothing. So Malawians are wearing secondhand clothing when during Dr. Banda's days, we were wearing clothes that were made from a seed that was grown in Malawi, cotton that was made in Malawi, cloth that was made in Malawi, tailored in Malawi by the Konda tailors. Even the Konda tailors, they're no longer there because no one is bringing them cloth to sew for them. And you've killed several, livelihoods, several industries in one go by selling a company like David and Whitehead and Sons. We used to make buses in Malawi. We used to make plastic bags in Malawi. We used to make window panes in Malawi. We used to make, paint. Right now, if you want to buy a tin of paint in Malawi, you probably can't afford it because it's too expensive. Because as Edson said, the tax on it, the overheads on it are just too high. You'd rather buy a bag of a tin of paint from outside the country. And that is the things that has killed Malawi and continues to kill Malawi. We need to bring government-owned industries and companies. We need to bring government projects in the country. We cannot subcontract or outsource the building of a national road to somebody that just got in the business because they support the party. They have no idea, there are no engineers in that company, and yet because they clap hands as the president is passing by, when their project proposal is put in front of decision makers, they take that one. Or they're leaned upon to make a decision towards that person. This is the corruption that was brought out in the pastoral letter, that we can't just be giving each other contracts, assigning each other contracts just because they're our friends or they're our relatives or they come from our tribes or regions. So the corruption in the country has grown really, really to alarming levels. And it's actually deplorable, quite deplorable, that a lawyer, a man of the law, can sit there and be next to ministers in his cabinet that have been charged. They're blaring headlines on the front page, and he's having a cabinet meeting with them, and everything is okay. But that's, that's called, that is, he's grown an alligator skin. And it's terrible. There's nothing that can, change him, nothing that can move him. And if there's nothing that can move him, the elections should. And the elections did, but because of the fraud that was there, which the Constitutional Court said there was fraud, then they have to go. We have to have new elections. They nullified those elections, and it was endorsed and upheld by the Supreme Court. That is the highest you can go. You can't go any higher than the Supreme Court of Malawi. And we have a constitution that has divided our governance in three structures. The executive, headed by the president, the legislature, headed by a speaker, and the judiciary, headed by a chief justice. and those have got, you know, equal parts, and they've got their roles that they play. And the chief, you know, the judiciary headed by the Chief Justice said the elections are annulled. We're going to have the, you know, we're going to have new presidential elections, and those things have to happen. They better happen.
I was wondering how important is the system of checks and balances in Malawi, in view of the fact that the Malawian judiciary has demonstrated its fierce political independence, given that it was able to find courage to overturn or to annul an election won by an incumbent president, Professor Peter Mutharika.
Shaka, what the Malawi courts have done is a rekindle. Rather, I would say, it's brought back the trust, the confidence, and the desire that Malawians have had as regards the bodies that are mandated to provide the checks and balances. For example, the Malawi judicial system, it has shown the world, for example, and Africa at large, that despite of anything, you still can perform and transact your business by just following what is on the ground, what has been presented to you, and by following the statutes that are laid down. We never gave it a chance that maybe the Malawi courts would annul at least these past elections. Between you and me, I would say what has been demonstrated is the beginning of what the Malawi institutions that are governed or that are public are supposed to show. We have the Anti-Corruption Bureau, the Ombudsman, the Office of, all these bodies must learn from what the judicial, our judiciary has just demonstrated. There were issues. You may have heard that the judiciary were enticed with money to help the other party or other politicians to win or kick out this particular case. But then the judiciary was strong. And here it is from the High Court. The Supreme Court ruled independent of any other incentive. So that alone gives hope to Malawians who will eventually, in this case, go and vote knowing that the truth will always out. And our judicial system, for example, and others will start from there being honest and transact their business accordingly. These are public offices that needs public trust. And what we are seeing now is a Malawi where even fear will not be there if you have the truth for you. So yes, Malawi is now awake. Malawians have trust. Malawians have hope that even these forthcoming presidential elections will be valid, will be credible, because amongst others, Shaka, you will learn that in the Supreme Court ruling, they actually said, lucky you, the commissioners, who, in quote unquote, missed these past elections, because the Malawi Electoral Commission will pay for you. But come these forthcoming elections and going forward, no one will pay for you, for your sins, for your crime. You will pay from your own pockets. So that also sets an example as to how we should work, transact, and deal with public offices.
As I often say, time is not our best ally. We'll go for a break, and when we come back, we shall continue with the discussion. So please, don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Health Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lina Mudu, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
Welcome back to the special edition of Straight Talk Africa. Our distinguished guests are Janet Karim and Edson Chagala, and our discussion is the upcoming election in Malawi, perhaps the only other country on the African continent that pretty much took made the same decision courtesy of the Supreme Court of its country, besides Malawi, was Kenya, the Republic of Kenya. And it is also interesting that the two founding presidents, the one of Malawi, Dr. Hastings Kamuzu-Banda, and the one of Kenya, Jomo Kenyatta, Mzee Jomo Kenyatta, were both students for many, many years in Europe, and eventually led their countries to political independence. How important is the upcoming election, really?
Shaka, the upcoming elections are very crucial because now it's the decision of the youthful Malawian who wants to see that which he was promised. You're looking at Peter Mutharika, who has ruled for the 5 years, and now what is on the ground? Do they get what they really were promised? If not, if you give it another mandate to rule for the next 5 more years, will he accomplish what he promised to give Malawians? Again, you're looking at the new youths coming on the political arena. You're looking at Chilima, the vice president, who has now gone into the opposition, trying to align himself with the major political party, the Malay Congress Party, and the other parties forming a formidable alliance, saying, no, I have the stamina to take Malawi together with my colleagues to some higher level. So the youth are always expecting something better than what they've been given so far. So we are looking at the Malawi, the fresh elections coming with a lot of promises, and again, trying to see what has been laid on the ground. Is it that which wanted there all? Indeed, these people can bring what they promised when voted back into power.
Now, let me come to you, Janet. There are some Malawian observers who have said that since independence, when Nyasaland regained its political independence from Britain in the 60s, under the name of the Republic of Malawi, that was the first time that you had a very important election. And that the next time you had an important election, in their view, not mine, was in 1994, when a one Bakiri Muluzi was able to defeat the leader of the Malawi Congress Party, a man that was essentially revered, and some looked at him as a political or a presidential monarch of sorts. Not only was he Dr. Hastings Kamuzu-Banda, the president of Malawi, but he was, among other things, known as the Yamuyaya, the Mwazi. That was, in the view of Malawian political observers, another very important election. How would you say, for example, that the upcoming election is the kind of important election that pretty much may in fact be on the same page as the other two elections that observers mentioned?
Thank you very much for that question, because I was there in 1993, and I'm still here in 2020. The election in 1994 took place, it took Malawians 25 years to say, enough is enough. This is too much. Yes, they had seen a lot of developments, and I must tell you, Shaka, that in the 25 years that Dr. Banda was president, all the developments that you see in Malawi were there, during the time that they were made, during the time Dr. Banda was president. And I minus from there the parliamentary building in Lilongwe, which was built by during the time of Bingu Mutharika, and then the mausoleum that houses the remains of our former president. Other than that, there has been no developments, major developments, that have taken place in the 25 years since we gained our independence. What we credit Muluzi with is dismantling our industrial in the country. What we can credit Bingu with is a growing tokenism, that if you go to the DPP, if you support the DPP, and young boys started painting their bodies with blue paint, and I I cry for them because they don't know what is in that blue paint. What is that in the blue paint? It could be a danger to their bodies. We don't know. But they started. There was a start of tokenism that has, you know, the country has not been able to dismantle, and a growing corruption, and it reached a crescendo, and actually. Is during Dr. Joyce Banner's term in office, 2-year term in office, when she and her officials came in to know that the, you know, civil servants were bleeding money out of the government system, and this is called the cash gate. Okay, she heard about it, she noted it, and she brought in investigators, and I credit that to her. But unfortunately, she was then hounded by Mutharika. For 2 years, the majority of Mutharika's first term was hounding Joyce Banda and looking for her so that he could imprison her. When in actual fact now the international courts have said no, she had nothing to do with that, the corruption that was going on. But during his now, you know, during also his office, this continued, the government fraud, these persons in high office. There was the Mace Gate scandal, which, you know, miraculously, the minister that was guilty of that, or being charged of that, was declared not guilty.
Are you talking about the Cash Gate scandal?
I'm talking about there's a Cash Gate scandal and there's a Mace Gate scandal.
Scandal
is we had a famine in Malawi, and a minister, Chaponda, went to Zambia and negotiated a price. And when he came back to say that, oh, I've gotten this great powerful deal with Zambia, maize that was costing five thousand Malawi kwacha was landing in Malawi at 12,000 kwacha. So that, you know, in a country that has got famine. And I already told you, let's say the minimum wage is 15,000 kwacha. So you have to buy a bag of maize for 12,000 kwacha. How are you going to survive the rest of the month when you subtract that with, on 3,000 kwacha? It's a sad situation. At the same time, we're also seeing that in the time of COVID, ministers are pocketing 450,000 Malawi kwacha. When a health official in COVID, working on COVID, is pocketing 60,000 kwacha per month, and yet a minister is pocketing 450,000 kwacha per day just to sit at a round table to talk about the briefing, to give you figures. I can give you the figures of the COVID-19. I don't need to sit at a table, at Capitol Hill, and then pocket. I can give you those figures.
Thank you.
And I give them to you for free. But ministers are pocketing monies, and that is corruption that is being seen. It's on in the newspapers every day. And the next thing we're going to see, although Chagara said that the journalists have not been imprisoned yet, they haven't been imprisoned, but they haven't been listened to either, because these news items are appearing every day, blaring headlines. Headline after headline after headline after headline. And thank God we've also got private televisions in Malawi. It's not only private radio stations, but we also got private televisions. And this is what is giving fuel to Malawians, because they're going around following the opposition leaders where they're campaigning, and they're able to bring the news to Malawians as it is happening.
Well, that, of course, makes Edison's point that at least the incumbent president has not undermined your freedom of the press or freedom of expression. Let me come to you, Edison. What about you? How important is this upcoming election? As important as, according to some Malawian observers, the election in 1994, when Bakiri Muluzi went through, essentially defeated the Malawian founding president, Dr. Hastings Kamuzu Banda, the man that was considered to be the Yamuyaya, the Nguazi of Malawi, the man that, in fact, political pundits regarded as a political presidential monarch.
Correct. If we are to weigh the two extremes,
you will discover, Shaka, that Malawians were tired of the one-party regime because, you know, there comes a time when you are empty of your ideas. You kind of like repeat the very same things that you heard. That when you reach that moment, it's like there is no progress. So Malawians were like, okay, fine, we have had Kamuzu for up this long. And with the atrocities that were being committed then they felt like, no, time to change has come. Let's have the freedom. Let's have the rights, our rights respected. So they ousted Kamuzu Banda. We brought in democracy. And that was the beginning of the multi-party kind of regime in Malawi. At first, Bakire Muluzi brought the freedoms. Everybody could do stuff. Everybody was able to do what was then deemed as a taboo or indeed no go zone or what you can't say, you can't do this, women can't do that. But then that freedom was a freedom that had no limitation, kind of. It brought in so many things, Shatta. Corruption, mm-hmm. Tribalism was rampant. Everybody was doing, it was more or less like free-for-all kind of democracy, you know? So Bakire Muluzi did his part. But then people started questioning what this democracy was all about. Was it about freedoms without responsibility? Yes, rights are there, but can we just let everything be done without checks and balances? Then we saw the regime of Dr. Bingwa Mutharika, may he soul rest in peace. He came and then he started building structures and he started putting things together. That was seen as a punishment again. People were like, he's trying to behave and act like Kamuzu. But you see, Africans, just like everybody else elsewhere, they need some guidance. They need some whips, not whipping that you are punishing someone, but a whip that will correct things. So Bingwa Mutharika came in and tried to correct the mistakes that were made during the Muluzi era. And that was seen as negative to an extent, but later on, it was seen as a corrective kind of a strategy. Sadly, he died when he was in the office. Joyce Banda came, she did her part. She helped a lot, she did her part. Within 2 years, we could see some new things coming in, trying to sort one problem and another. Came this current president now, he's kind of like trying to build where his brother left. But how this is done, it's kind of like he's left it more to people, like those in public offices, to do their way, much as maybe things would be reported to him by us, for example, reporters, some action would take longer to be implemented. So that has been kind of like a negative area where people would say, Peter Mutharika is a very good man, but no, his presidency is questionable because he does not necessarily push like his brother was. He's not able to argue and maybe critique and put things straight and quickly in order. So that has been his negative side of life. But to a larger extent, I think we have had our own experiences. We believe the coming in president, if another new one is coming, would look at correcting things, putting everything just like we do at our respective homes. And if Peter Mutharika is to come in, Shaka, he must really now look at where did I go wrong and how can I change for the change to be effective.
Janet, talk to me about the man that inherited the mantle of leadership in as far as the Malawian founding party is concerned. I am talking about Mr. Chakwera, a man who leads the Malawi Congress Party, and indeed the man that is leading the Grand Coalition. What makes him tick? Walk us through the kind of qualities, the kind of competence that you think Mr. Chakwera has. What is his vision, for example, for Malawi? Does he have any particular vision for Malawi? What makes him tick, really?
I must again come and own up. Dr. Jane Ansah and I were in the same class at Chancellor College. So let me put that in front of everybody before I go on. But Dr. Chakwera is a man of integrity. He is honest. And he is the perfect servant leader. I'm glad my colleague Eldson brought up the the issue of the teaching of Jesus, that he came here, taught about he was for education, agriculture, as well as the health of people. Dr. Chakwera was the leader of the Assemblies of God, General Secretary of the Assemblies of God Church in Lilongwe, and the General Secretary of the whole Malawian Assemblies of God Churches. So he's a man of integrity, he's honest, and he is a servant leader. And he, to me, has, having joined the Malawi Congress Party, what did the Malawi Congress Party stand for? I told you already, Malawi does not have any minerals or any, you know, resources of that nature. We own our only mineral that we have, our only natural resource that we have is the land. So the backbone, the mainstay of Malawi is agriculture. We have sugar plantations in Malawi. We've got tobacco plantations in Malawi. We've got corn, maize in Malawi. And what is important in Malawi is making sure that Malawians have got food security at the household level. And by reducing the cost of fertilizer, that shows that Dr. Chakwera's first and foremost program or plan on his ticket is to ensure that every Malawian goes to bed eating three meals a day. There's a cliche that is going around there right now that if you eat one meal a day, it should be by choice, not because that's all you have. And to me, that speaks to, you know, to many Malawians. It appeals to many Malawians that they're going to ensure, this is a party that is going to ensure that you have three meals a day. So you have food on your table. There's education. Education has been a problem in Malawi for many, many years. Many years. It started plunging, and it has continued to plunge. 25 years, we speak about education in Malawi, but we really have not taken it seriously, as Edson pointed out before. What has been important is whom do you support? How much do you support? And when they say jump, how high do you jump? And that's a problem. That doesn't, you know, get you, you know, to your next stage in life. It may get you a meal today, but it doesn't secure a meal for you the next day. So Dr. Chakwera is a person that wants to build Malawians, first of all, unite them, and build the nation, that we are a united nation. It doesn't mean that we are one party. No, that's not what he's speaking about. It means we are one nation, Malawians, and not, you know, maybe I'm more Malawian because I come from the party where the president comes from. No, but we are all Malawians, whether you're a Tumbuka, you're a Tonga, you're a Chewa, you're a Sena, you're a Lomwe, you're a Nyanja. We are all Malawians. Oh, let me mention my tribe. You're a Ngoni. It doesn't matter. We are all Malawians. So we're building one Malawi, not, you know, several segments, fragments of Malawi all over the place. So Dr. Chakwera is uniting Malawians, saying, let's come together. We can agree on things, but let us agree. And after that, we are still Malawians. It doesn't make you less Malawian because you disagree with what the president has said. What is needed of a leader is to listen. And when he listens, he acts on it. But if he just listens and hears it and just goes to bed and comes back the next day, it's business as usual. It's as if he hasn't even heard you speak. That is insulting, you know, to Malawians. And we have seen this president hearing people, listening to them. The next day, it's as if the people have not even spoken. And that's what Malawians are angry about, because the president has been like an absentee president. He's there, he's hearing you, but he's not paying attention to what you're saying. The empathy, the compassion has not been there in this leader. And this is what is there in Dr. Chakwera. He's empathetic, he's compassionate, he's sympathetic of the people, and he is going to deliver, because, and it's, you know, it's incumbent upon him, and he will succeed, because he's made even the his vice president is going to be the Minister of Finance. That's an important thing, because the 25 years, all the presidents in Democratic Malawi have not used their vice presidents. By the time 5 years are over, they and their vice president are in disarray. They're not talking to each other. They cannot even be in the same room. What kind of leadership is that?
Janet, if I heard you correctly, would it be accurate to say that the incumbent government views Malawi in the context of what is yours is ours, but what is mine is mine?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, in fact, what is yours, we're going to take and we're going to divide it amongst ourselves, and we will throw you muzzles as and when we feel, you know, we feel comfortable to do so. If we don't feel comfortable to do so, we won't do it. In COVID-19, they said they were going to give every Malawian that is a poor person, they were going to give them, I think they mentioned 40,000 kwacha. I haven't heard anything like that happening. What I heard was Muli, one of the ministers in the DPP, Muli and Atuperi, going to the northern region to give Malawians some money. And the, you know, the Malawians there, they chased them out of there. And they told them, to get out of here, we don't want your money. And this is the corruption that I'm talking about. How do you give people money, and how do you account for it? Where did it come from? Why are you giving the people this money?
Interesting.
It's just for them to, you know, so that you work for them. And it's not, you know, if they were there was going to be a money-giving ceremony, a handout, there should be some formality. There should be some openness. So there has been no openness, no transparency. It's just people coming in with bags of money. And as you give the money to them and say, okay, I'm giving you this money. And some of them have been giving out monies and then taking away their voter registration certificates. That's corruption right then and there. In this period, since February 3rd, 2020, people have been going around in the villages saying, I'm going to give you a loan, give me your voter certificate. So there are some people in the country that don't have their voter certificate, registration certificates, because it's been taken away from them by unscrupulous people that are in this government right now.
Edison, what about you? Could you please respond to the same question? What makes Dr. Chakwera tick? What would you say is his vision, if we have to talk about the vision thing? What is his vision for Malawi, in your view?
Dr. Lazarus Chakwera for the Malawi Congress Party is coming on the political scene with his experience as a leader of the church. He has been a leader of the church, and in the religious circles is highly regarded as somebody who is very prominent. He's coming out of the religious background with no dents, if I were to use that. At the same time, he's somebody who has an experience of the past regime, the Kamuzu Banda regime, and I'm sure he knows what Malawians want. In this regard, I'm looking at what he has promised Malawians, that he will reduce the price of the fertilizer. Because Malawi is an agriculture-based economy. So if you are giving people kind of like free fertilizer, you are assured of a bumper yield. And the people who are food, they are assured of, you know, hard work. They can work hard in their respective places. And in the long run, you have healthy people. And Malawi can grow only if they have got, we have got healthy people. So he is coming on the political scene with promising of food, which is very paramount. Mm-hmm. And if that is achieved, I'm sure you'll be a darling to many. At the same time, you are looking at a president who has paired with somebody with experience from government, somebody who has been the vice president in the current regime. So he also, as a young man, is coming on the political scene knowing that Malawi is a democracy that has gone in two phases. But now if it's run like business, as a corporate entity, because it's coming from the corporate world, I'm sure he will also devise mechanisms and strategies that will see Malawi progress better and quicker to fix the lost time.
Talking about President Professor Peter Mutharika, what would you say, for example, that was his single most important decision during his presidency? And what about his single most regrettable decision, in your view, under the same period?
One, I would say in his regime, he has respected the freedom of the press. We are able to write, we are able to report, we are able to publish critically or critiquing his government. And we have seen changes happening because the reporter or journalists are able to provide some checks and balances. If things are going wrong in government, we have reported and things have been verified, investigated, and we have been spared. That alone has been a plus for him. He has also tried to put in place structures for the technical colleges where skills for young people in the rural setting and elsewhere would go and at least gain some technical skills. And that's a big plus for him. However, I'm looking at these structures as structures, but there is need to have the manpower, to have technical people in place, enough resources to make sure that these things run. However, I'm also looking at him as somebody who has been receiving a lot of information, but maybe making instant and the speedy kind of decisions has been some of his shortcomings.
To what extent would you say, Edison, that the coronavirus pandemic has affected Malawian politics? And here I am talking about campaigning for the upcoming elections. And to what extent also do you think the coronavirus is likely to affect or influence the outcome in as far as the upcoming elections is concerned?
Shaka, while the whole world is scared of coronavirus or COVID-19, Malawi is as well concerned, and we are as well threatened because we have already lost 4 people and close to 100 now that have been diagnosed to be positive of coronavirus. However, Malawians, in my own view, as a reporter, as a journalist, they are dealing with a long-standing political problem. COVID has come in the midst of the problem that has actually put Malawians to a corner. So COVID-19, yes, we have, and people are dying. But what is seen on the ground, Shaka, is something different. We're kind of like living in a different planet altogether. Because as the campaign is going on, as the days are, as we're counting down the day of the polls, many people are thronging the rallies, both for the opposition and the ruling. No social distance is there, Shaka. No people are putting on masks to avoid or prevent the COVID-19. People are, their mindset is tuned to let me have the president. Let me go to the polls first. Let me deal with this political problem, then I can go to the COVID-19 and treat it accordingly.
Janet, what about you? What is your response, for example, to the question that I asked Edison earlier about how, for example, the coronavirus pandemic has affected Malawians during this campaigning, and how do you expect the same virus to affect Malawians during the upcoming election?
It is a very sad thing that we have the coronavirus at a time when we have this other urgent and pressing matter, that of electing a new president. And to Malawians, we used to have a song in the old days with Kamuzu Banda, Zivu Titani Ife Malawi, Tilibambuyo Bakamuzu. Come what may, we are behind Kamuzu. Come what may, coronavirus or no coronavirus, we are going to call for an election. We want to have a new leader. And that is what Malawians are resolute about right now. They're not social distancing. They're excited about getting a new president.
On that note, our guests were Edison Chagala and Janet Karim. Get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.